Our next presentation is Raj Hick. He will be talking about land decomposition dynamics as a function of soil diet.
All right, well, thank you, Anna, for the introduction. As she said, today I'll be discussing land decomposition dynamics as a function of cattle diet. So throughout the U.S., there's over 48 million hectares of private pasture land, and a lot of that is in the Midwest and upper Midwest, and it is dominated primarily by cool season pastures. Typically, these are fertilized with N in order to increase production. An alternative to that, in a way of increasing production, is to interseed legumes into those cool season grass pastures. The reason for doing this is that it reduces the need for fertilizer, it improves the seasonal distribution of both forage mass and forage yield, and improves forage quality in things such as good protein and digestibility. It also increases palatability and improves the animal performance, which we found in other studies at the University of Nebraska. So to start with, our objective for this large project was to compare nitrogen cycling and use efficiency of ruminants grazing pastures with and without forage legumes. Since this is a partnering symposium, we do have a lot of partners on this project. It's very large. The partners at the University of Nebraska include John Gretzky, who just spoke, Walter Schacht, who's also a co-PI and co-advisor, who's working on the forage mass and forage quality in those pastures, Martha Mamel, who is working on the carbon and nitrogen dynamics in those pastures and the dung, and then Jim McDonald, who is the ruminant nutritionist working on the cattle selectivity and diet. So we're getting into the pasture experimental design a little bit here. So this pasture was established in 2010. It was a smooth brome grass pasture. The treatments were a legume interseeded pasture here. It's three replications. And it was interseeded with alfalfa, birdsfoot tree floral, and red clover. The ones not in red are our traditionally fertilized smooth brome grass with 90 kilograms of N per hectare. Each of these reps had six paddocks that were 1.2 hectares each. These are rotationally stocked with yearling steers at approximately 20 AUMs per hectare. So location, as I said, University of Nebraska, Lincoln, Agricultural Research and Development Center near Meade, Nebraska. You can see it. It's in the Saunders County there in the black outline on the state. The common soil types there were silty clay loam and other silt loams. The average annual precipitation was 760 millimeters. With 75% of that coming during the growing season. The temperature, annual average max of 16.4, and the minimum was 3.4. I just wanted to state this, I'm not showing any data on this, but as a part of this project, diet sampling was also done from ruminally fissulated steers there, as you can see in the picture, the surgically inserted hole. We're doing that to do botanical composition and selectivity and quality of what those steers are actually grazing. So to get more into the dung decomposition experiment, as you can see, there are beautiful things that like dung too, such as that butterfly. So what we wanted to know is, do cattle grazing these legume interseeded pastures produce dung with faster decomposition rates and end cycling? So in terms of experimental design, we had a randomized complete block design. The experiment was replicated in June and August of 2014 and 2015. So our treatments were dung collected from those steers grazing these pastures, the smooth brome grass pastures, with the legume interseeded, an N-fertilized, and then also an unfertilized smooth brome grass pasture. After this dung was collected, it was placed out, and it was harvested 3, 7, and 30 days after it was placed again, as you can see on this site here in the picture. The common soil type here is one soil type, just want to state that, unlike the pastures. So before the down placement at our site, we mowed the grass down to 10 centimeters to ensure that everything was the same. We established 0.9 by 0.9 meter plots, and as you can see there in the red outline, we also clipped the ground area in the middle down to ground level and removed the litter in order to ensure that we've got good dung to soil contact. In some of the plots, we inserted a PVC ring in that clipped area in order to measure CO2 flux, and we also took initial soil samples too. So we had to get a lot of dung for this project. So in terms of dung acquisition, for each treatment, for every time we replicated it, we needed 38 liters of dung. So there was a lot of dung. We went out early in the morning while it was still cool and it was fresh, and we collected it by hand, as you can see there, in buckets. And the freshest dung was chosen by visual and physical examination. It was actually fairly easy to tell because we could tell where the steers were laying the night before, and they would get up and defecate right in those areas, so it wasn't hard to find it. After we collected that from the day, the dung was consolidated in larger buckets, and it was taken back to the university and stored for a maximum of 5 days before we went out and placed it on the site. So when we actually went out and placed it, we poured all the dung by treatment into large feed tubs or protein tubs and homogenized it. We made sure we stirred it often and actually after every time a pat was placed. So you can see we used a highly technical way of stirring it using T-posts. It was effective though, we can see that in when we took subsamples from that. So what we did is we took 1.5 liters of dung and put in a pitcher and made sure all the air was out so we can ensure that all of them were the same amount. Out of that 1.5 liters, we took 100 milliliters of sample to look at initial moisture and dung content or composition. The remaining 1.4 liters was placed on those areas where we had clipped in the round areas and using a form that was 21.5 centimeters in diameter. And again, we made sure there was good soil to dung contact. So the dung harvest, like I said, they were harvested after 3, 7, and 30 days after application. As you can see on the picture here on the left, that is a picture from this August, and after 3 days after application. You can see in this case, the pad is still actually solid, which is not always the case in collecting these. But as you can see, there's also a high amount of moisture still in the middle of that pat. And we also did collect that. We collected it all, made sure we removed any soil and litter that had stuck to the dung. And then we again made sure of that when we got back to the lab when we were doing dry matter, percent dry matter remaining, and we removed all those, anything that would be attached to it still. We also did take soil cores directly below the pat after the pat was removed to look at carbon and nitrogen. I'm not going to be going over that today, but that's just another part of this project. So in terms of results here, on the y-axis we have the percent dung dry matter remaining. And this is in 2014. So in June, there was a difference, not between the legume and fertilized, between the unfertilized and the unfertilized. But in August, there were no differences, which is not exactly what we were expecting with that legumes filling in that more dormant season, as John talked about, in the middle of summer in those cool season grasses. So in 2015, we did find there was a significant difference between the legume and the unfertilized treatments. But again, in August, there were no differences again, and there was a difference between the legume interseeded treatment between the two between June and August. So like I said, we also worked on soil CO2 flux with those PVC rings, and the picture on the left here, you can see the dung that's in and around those PVC rings. same size as all the other pads. And we use the Lycor 8100A automated soil CO2 system. As you can see there on the picture on the right, it was a chamber that was placed on there, and it was removed from PVC to PVC. And that was always done at 9 a.m. in the morning to ensure that we got similar repeated measures. So in terms of results for the CO2 flux, we were measuring it in micromoles of carbon dioxide per meter squared per second, based off directly from the program from the Lycor unit. In June of 2014, we did not see any significant differences between the treatments. However, in August, there were significant differences in treatments. The blue there, as you see, the legume interseeded. It was much higher in August of that year, and the differed from both the fertilized and the unfertilized treatments. So, soil respiration is highly dependent on the temperature and also soil moisture. So I want to point out some weather data here. We have our temperature on the left and our precipitation on the right. This was from June through August, is on the x-axis there. And also we showed our daily temperatures and daily high temperature and low temperature. So I want to just show with some of these instances where there's low readings. So on the left two points, we can see that it was by temperature. We have not run the statistics on it, but there's just a relationship there. We can see those reasons for the dips in reading. On the one in August, there was a high precipitation event that caused a lower reading for that soil CO2 flux. Again, here's the June and August 2015. So in this year, we did see a difference between the legume and the unfertilized in June. And there was also significant difference in August between the legume and the unfertilized. There was no difference between the legume and unfertilized, however. Again, here's some of our weather data we're looking at. Same graph for 2015. There were not as many instances where we could see differences, just visually, not statistically yet. But there was a couple. There's some high precipitation events that caused a lower reading in the soil CO2 flux and microbial activity. So in conclusion, all dung collection treatments, the legume interseeded, the unfertilized, and the unfertilized, lost dry matter at similar rates, and they also showed similar CO2 flux readings. This is suggesting that there's limited effects of cattle grazing diets on the decomposition of dung in pastures. The greater drivers of this were season and time. The dung had to sit there and had time to decompose. And these are strongly influenced by precipitation and temperature, as we saw in the CO2 flux as well. So in regard to suggestions for this, we have seen in other projects the increase in average daily gain from our steers grazing the legume interseeded pastures, much higher than the unfertilized pastures. So although we have not seen an increase in decomposition yet from these legume interseeded pastures, there have been higher daily gains in the steers and overall weight gain. So the legume interseeded pastures are a way to increase production compared to the unfertilized pastures. I would like to thank a lot of people who helped me out with this, especially those early mornings of dung collection, which not everybody wanted to get up and get out there at 6 a.m., but it wasn't too bad. I'd also like to thank University of Nebraska and the NCRA for this project. And with that, are there any questions? Yes.
So maybe we'll hear later in some of the other talks. Do you have any feel for how much of the decomposition is biological versus physical, microbial, insect-mediated, physical factors as you go through these 30-day periods?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, There are some other presentations doing dung beetle and stuff like that. We saw dung beetles out there, so we know they're there, so they're working on the dung paths. There was one instance where we had looked like higher dry matter gain, and so some of that we don't know yet. Could be due to other microbial activity and organisms that are residing in the dung after placement. So it could be a reason why there's not a, even though the rate was the same, why there's not a faster rate of change. So, did that answer your question?
Yes.
Right. We are analyzing the actual, like those rumen samples, and from just looking at numbers, it looks like they're fairly similar, actually, across treatments. So that could be one of the reasons. You know, if that the higher quality diet causes it to break down more, and so it's used more by the cattle, which we see those higher gains, and kind of relates to the inefficiency aspect of that. So that could be one of the issues why we're not seeing so much difference between the treatments. Yes.
Real quick, that's a question. So have you done any fecal analysis?
We have a composition. Well, we're doing that currently. We're going to do total nitrogen, total carbon. We actually have done water extractable carbon and nitrogen on the dung, and we're just in the first part of analyzing that from the years. So. We want to make sure, if there's a narrower carbon to nitrogen ratio, then we anticipate there'd be in the soil, in the specific soil, we anticipate there'd be higher decomposition rates, just because there's more N available. However, since we put on one soil type and we didn't see that,
Right.
And that's why we put, that's why everything was on one soil type, that we would eliminate any variability with that. So. Yes. I think it would be. We're doing, like I said, with the diet samples and also the we have vegetation samples that we went out and clipped to know what was available for those steers grazing. So by doing that, we're looking at the crude protein or nitrogen and seeing if there's differences there. So that would be one way of seeing if there is that much of a difference. Like you asked about if it goes through the cattle the same way or if it's digested differently in the rumen and then the end result is similar, we could see if there's a difference with that and the efficiency.